Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
It's a great question.
Wow, that's a great question.
That's a great question.
That's a great question.
And that's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
What's wrong with you?
Listen, do you remember the old Nirvana line? I wish I was like you, easily amused.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remember that line?
You are easily amused.
I really am. And I wish it for everyone. It's goofy and stupid, but it's a wonderful thing in life.
It's better than the opposite, which
Dude.
Is tough to amuse.
Yeah, like
especially when you're going around trying to be funny all the time, like me.
Like, laughs are free. Like, whatever. Just, you know what I mean? Like, and I've reached that age where, like, it... Boy, if you're a dad, you get so much joy out of the dumb joke that makes your kid roll their eyes and get embarrassed and turn red like that. Dude, I wake up for that.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm doing here.
My kids are still scarred by back to school night when I immediately started running material. I was impersonating. I had done an impersonation of one of the teachers. This is an impersonation sensation. And I told my son, I'm going to go there and do my impersonation of your teacher. Dad, don't.
Don't.
Of course, you know, you get halfway through and it's like, you start doing it and the teacher's like,
Okay.
And my son's just like, oh my God, most embarrassing thing ever.
But
so
you know what?
You
I hope that your son gets to a point where he actually is just like, you know what? My dad came to back to school night.
Every year.
Like that's right. Because, like, my kids have to beg me to go because I'm like, kids, it's Thursday. There's a game on.
Right.
So,
and plus, by the time you get home, you're rushing in there. It's a little difficult.
I mean, come on. You know what I mean? And then since COVID, you go to back to school night and half the teachers just stick a sign on their door. And they're like, yeah, sorry. I couldn't make
couldn't
it.
Make
I'm like,
it.
Wait a minute. If you're not going to, why am I here?
Seriously.
And you're not. Anyway, 888-957-9570. I mean this in a really curious, genuine way. Why are you bothered by holdouts? Not just you, everybody. Why are you bothered by holdouts? And I get it if your answer is no, I just don't like holdouts because, like, it means players not playing. But in general, whenever I hear, I feel it's very selective when we get upset at a player for a holdout. And like, yes, maybe it's just because of the emotion around our team. Like, if you are a 49er fan, you're upset. I can't tell you how many calls have we taken from people who are like, dude, you signed a contract. Show up. You signed it. So did Terry McLaurin. He was not on a rookie deal. Terry McLaurin had already been paid millions and millions and millions of dollars. But he didn't want to go to camp this year. And he didn't, and he got broken off again.
Right. You think Washington fan was upset about that?
I would bet. I have no idea. I didn't hear much of that. McLaurin is a fan favorite out there. I saw him at camp every day, and instead of practicing, he was signing autographs.
Right.
I bet the fans were thrilled with it.
There are levels to this, and that's partly...
That's what I want to know.
There's like, levels.
Who's the bad guy? Juwan Jennings, is he not good enough? Was it because the deal was just last year? Like, what is it?
Yeah, it's both of those things.
Because they're all under... They all signed a contract. All of them.
Right. They all signed a contract. If not, they're free agents in football. And, you know, when you get to the Trent Williams situation, and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best left tackles in the history of the game, he gets a certain amount of gravitas that Juwan Jennings has not earned off of one good year. And part of it for me is also the fact that he signed a contract, an extension, last May, that was, at the time, that was a very nice extension. He hadn't yet earned, I don't think, that level of money. He'd been good third in Juwan.
Yeah, they liked him. He was
there's a reason why he didn't get more money last offseason. It's because that is about where his market value was.
Brother, he might have been the MVP of the Super Bowl had they won it.
Sure.
He might have been. Like, he's, you know what I mean? I think that, like, is there a little bit of a Draymond Green thing in there where it's like, oh, you never put up huge stats, but if you're a Niner fan, you know. And you knew before last year that he was good.
He's good, yeah.
We didn't know he was that good. He's better than, I didn't think he could be a 1,000-yard receiver.
And he wasn't, but, and I know
close
it's semantics because he would have been, but if you want to rank all the receivers in football, and this is not using fantasy stats.
Sure.
He's the 45th highest paid receiver. Is he a top 20 receiver? Probably not. Is he top 30? Maybe.
Yeah.
I put him in that 31 to 40 range. And so when you look at what he's making the 45th most money on average annual. And, you know, Tutu Atwell is making $10 million. Do you want to bump him up to $10 million?
He's better than Tutu Atwell.
Well, Tutu Atwell is better at, you know, going deep and being a vertical threat for that offense. And this is where it becomes difficult because every offense needs different receivers to do different things. And the Niners need Juwan Jennings to be physical, to block in that, you know, the two wide receiver sets that they run a lot of. So replacing him is going to be hard, but for me, it just rubs me a little bit the wrong way when you sign a deal just, you know, basically 15 months ago.
I get it.
And now you want to come back and get more.
I get it. But then again, like, and here's my thing. I'm not taking Juwan's side. I'm just taking neither side. Like, I don't blame him for asking, and largely it's because of culture. This is the NFL culture. The league set this up. Every time someone goes, hey, is a team allowed to not pay you if you don't play well? Yes, they are. They're basically able to get out of these deals whenever they want. They're not guaranteed deals. So, yes, this is the way an NFL player fights for himself when he does outplay his deal, knowing that unfortunately this sport does not allow for the idea of, hey, I just signed a deal, and even though I outplayed it, I'm going to bet on myself, and we'll do this again next year when I'm a free agent. Well, you know what? Your ACL may be in tatters. Like, it's too physical. So that's the reason I support a player at least asking. Now, I'm not saying he should miss games. I don't think he will. That's reserved for the Trent Williams of the world,
right,
who completely went to war with Washington. And I give him an extra sort of flyer on that one because Washington's owner was one of the worst human beings on the face of planet Earth.
Yeah, different situation.
So it is a different situation. But in general, this is how business is done in the NFL when you outplay your deal, because it's the same way that the teams handle it when you underperform.
I get that. He got 8.4 guaranteed at signing. The only money that's not guaranteed are the $3 million, $3.5 million in escalators based on how much he plays and how well he plays this year. So I'm sure at the root of this is Juwan looking at that $3.5 million that he has to work hard to earn. He probably wants that guaranteed and maybe a little bit more. I don't know what the details are, but you look at what he actually did get, and he got $8.5 million, and he went out and outperformed it. So, sure, come back, ask for more money. You're always allowed to do that. I will put some of the blame on the Niners to this point, which is the notion that they have to win every deal. And we've known that for Bosa stretched it all the way out.
Overly competitive, yes.
Ayuk all the way out. They want to win the deal. And again, we don't know what he's asking for and what the team is countering with. The team might be saying, you get nothing, like they did to Mooney Ward.
Yeah,
Mooney said, I want what they're having. And they said, nah, we're not going to do that. And so he was in his feelings all year, and he ended up going elsewhere. So we don't know where this is on that line, that timeline, but I do know this. The Niners have found a way to have a lot of these stretch out into late August and early September.
And I don't think that's a win for anyone. Like, Juwan's not going to miss games. He's not going to sit out games. There's not enough money at stake here. That's just a terrible, terrible. If he does that, his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, is a moron. So he's not going to do that, but he can stretch it all the way to week one and make it a disadvantageous for the 49ers on the field. And that's just
Already at that point, I would say.
Let's go to John in the city here on Willard and Dibs. Hey, John, thank you for the call. What are you doing?
Hey, guys, what's going on?
What's up?
Hey, so, Mark, am I understanding correctly that what you're thinking is if one guy gets to do it, then it sets the precedent that any of the guys get to do it? Is that kind of like your take on this?
No, my take is that, the cat's already out of the bag on that, John. This is how NFL players do it. It happens around the league all the time, and it's based on non-guaranteed deals and an overly physical sport. So, I'm not taking only the player's side. I'm just understanding that when you see leverage, you strike. You try. So I have no problem with him asking. But I don't know what he's asking for. I said that yesterday. I don't know whose side to take until I know what he's asking for. I'm just not going to blindly come down on the team side, though, just because someone signed a contract. That's all.
Sure. And, like, I think that the deals that get prolonged in training camp, these guys rarely then go out and have a better season than what they're negotiating on. But I was listening to a podcast recently that Lou Williams was on, NBA player.
Yeah.
He was talking about he was on a team with Kevin Ollie, former UConn coach who was in the NBA, who was his vet. And Allen Iverson walks in the gym late, whatever, and Kevin Ollie pulls Lou Williams aside and says, "Hey, young guy, the rules aren't the same for everyone. The rules that he plays by are not the rules that we play by." And I don't think the idea that Terry McLaurin or these other guys sitting out gives someone like Juwan Jennings, it's just not the same for these middle guys. Like, they shouldn't pay him. He shouldn't be sitting out. And they'll be fine without him. The difference between Terry McLaurin to the Commanders and Juwan Jennings to the Niners is vast. And I just don't think the rules are the same for these $30 million a year guys.
That's an interesting take, John. I actually don't. Here's what I'll say.
John.
I agree with you that Terry is a better player, a more accomplished player than Juwan, but I actually don't agree with the statement you just made there that his importance to the Commanders is vastly ahead of Jennings' importance to the Niners. The Commanders can play without Terry McLaurin. They've got Debo now. They've got some other receivers that they really like who are up and coming. McLaurin is very good. But he's not a superstar. He's not Micah Parsons. So, yes, there are levels to this.
Right.
But I just want to point out that what I hear a lot of people say is, dude, you signed a deal. And I'm like, that's true for all of them.
Well, there's like 20 other guys who are going to be free agents next year, and he's the only one of the Niners on all this list. He's the only one who's asking for more money.
Yeah, he's probably the only one who vastly outperformed his deal, and his positional market happened to go absolutely crazy over the last couple of years. So I get it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm not on his side. I want this thing done. I want it done yesterday. That's all. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? And speaking of the guest line, it's going to be all fired up here in a matter of moments because Charles Davis of CBS is about to come on the show right here live at Splash at Thrive City. It's Willard and Dibs.
It's not just the open wheel. Hold on a second. Hey!
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
He's not just a great football broadcaster.
No,
you can hear. He knows how to put people in his place.
Especially on this day of days, National Dog Day, Mark.
National Dog Day is here, so we probably should get a little more info on who that dog is that Charles Davis was putting in its place last time he came on. And also last time he came on, it marked the continuation of the worst streak of my career, which is bringing Charles Davis on and continually saying that he works for a network for which he no longer works.
All right, a lot of pressure here then.
Today is the day, Charles, where it finally goes away for good. We're going to break this damn thing right now. I have practiced all morning.
Come on now.
I'm going to clear my throat and let it out. Ladies and gentlemen, on River Islands guest line on 95.7 The Game, Charles Davis of CBS Sports joins us on the show. Charles, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I am doing great. Is it okay if I show my age to begin with?
Of course.
All right? So what you just talked about there, like, we all have those things, all right? Where, okay, and this is my equation to it, right? When you would always say the other network. You remember Chevy Chase in European Vacation?
Oh, yeah.
When he got on the roundabout? And he couldn't get off the roundabout.
Big Ben,
hey, kids,
yes.
Look again, Big Ben. Right? That happens to all of us in some way, shape, fashion, form. Like anyone who's hearing our voices, just think to yourself, when you know there's something else you're supposed to say or something else you're supposed to do, and you keep coming back and doing it the other way and it drives you crazy, happens to absolutely all of us. To show my age, there was an episode of Mary Tyler Moore where Murray, the head writer, was writing for Ted Knight, who was the broadcaster. And back then, the broadcaster did everything, right? Like, you name it, news, everything. They'd bring on John Amos to do sports once a season. I think that was early diversity for the network. Hey, there's Gordy. He's our sports guy. But the episode was there was a big time person, head of a government, some sort, with a very difficult name to say. And Murray was in the hole gambling or something, and he ended up betting Ted Knight that Ted couldn't pronounce the name correctly the first time on air. And Ted Knight spent the whole day at the network nailing it, walking by Murray and just hitting him with it. Bam! Got it again. And, of course, as soon as the light came on, Ted choked and mispronounced the name. Murray won the bet, the whole deal. It happens to all of us. It happened to me in a game many, many, many years ago. I was working for TBS. We were doing Washington State hosting USC, Pete Carroll's tenure at USC. Troy Polamalu was playing, which really isn't that difficult if you're into football. Guys, that entire day, I could not say Polamalu. To this day, the person who does my boards for the games, Sam, been a friend since we've been working back in the TBS days, at least once a month will tease me about not being able to say Troy Polamalu. I mean, I got so flustered during the game. I couldn't get it. I had my head in my hands in the second quarter, and he and the crew have been laughing at me ever since. So long way of saying, my man, you're not alone.
The problem is Polamalu probably had 17 tackles in that game.
Exactly.
Well, here's the wild part. He sprained an ankle early and couldn't finish. And no, I did not want him out of the game, but at the same time.
Little relief, right? Yeah. Little relief. Well, and by the way, here's why, like, when he's coming up at USC, Charles, some of these names, they take a minute. Like, they seem not difficult now. All of us can say Atentacumpo. All of us can say Tungavailoa now, but we couldn't when we first met them. We were like, what is, I don't even know what to do with that name.
You know what would be fun? That would be really fun is if you took all of us, and you notice I say us. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Because it's real easy for people to point fingers all the time. But if we're in the business, it's us. All right. Wouldn't it be fun to take all of those people you're naming, right, with all these names that now we can rattle off, and let's say their first season of playing, let's say within their first 5 to 10 games, depending on whether it's football or basketball or whatever, and see how many different ways their names were pronounced early.
Oh man.
before we all got it.
That'd be a great blooper reel.
You would find me absolutely butchering names. And I don't mean to, because I want to get it right. I've had parents approach me about getting names right. Occasionally I've done it right, and they've been grateful.
Right.
I've had parents go, hey, you're messing up my kid's name. You know, and the last thing you want is mom upset because you didn't get their kid's name right.
No doubt about it. So, Charles Davis, CBS, like, look at this habit that we're creating here.
And that's a name we can all say.
You like DiMaggio on the 56-game streak. Now you're rolling.
Yeah, we're hot, and plus we can start the conversation with a name that I think we can handle, and that's Juwan Jennings. So, Charles, we've been sitting here in the Bay talking about this a lot with regard to, man, he's not, I mean, he's good, but he's not elite. He just signed a new deal last year, but his importance to the Niners is clear. They're banged up at the position, and here we are on cutdown day still dealing with this. So how do you see this from his perspective and the teams?
It's one of those deals where everything that you've said is laid out perfectly, but right now you'd have to say things have tipped to his advantage because of everything that's going on at the position. People hurt, nothing solidified, what's happening there. It works for him because of that. The Super Bowl appearance does not hurt one bit. That lingers in the minds of the public and people who like the team. The other part of it is he is so darn reliable for a quarterback. You can go there and get completions, even though you say to yourself, I'm not sure how we do that. Look, you go back to his time and go back to his combine, right? He ran a time that in a lot of cases kind of disqualifies a receiver. But I keep telling people all the time, sometimes you have to get past certain things. Maybe his biorhythms were off. Maybe he runs it a little bit faster later. But does he find ways to get open and make plays? Okay. This kid, this was a rookie from out of Miami. I don't know he's going to make it to the Tennessee Titans. Xavier Restrepo. He ran 4.81 at the combine this year, and that killed him. He doesn't get drafted. But somehow he caught 200 passes in college. Okay? Anquan Boldin is maybe my favorite one, who I think was a 4.8 plus 40-yard dash guy and caught 100 balls as a rookie. Strength, agility, timing, route running. Sometimes we have to get past the stopwatch, and Jennings has proven that during his career, that the stopwatch doesn't rule who he is as a player. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
And the conversation is made more fascinating to me by the fact that Kyle Shanahan's been able to do more with lesser at receiver and certainly running back. How much of the Shanahan factor plays into the stalemate insofar as, you know, maybe Kyle Shanahan thinks that he can find the next Juwan Jennings in his system?
Kyle Shanahan, I'm not speaking for him. I'm speaking as an observational person of him. In my mind, Kyle Shanahan always believes he can find someone else. He always believes he can find another player to do and scheme for and create. He always believes that whoever he steps in and puts out on the field, he'll find a way to make them better that day. And the truth of the matter is his track record says he can and has. That's what it comes down to. Very few people are we going to talk about, I think, can scheme and call a game the way Kyle Shanahan can. I mean, there are times people in this league, right, let's face it, guys, you know what it's like when we talk about people coming out of college, right? Quarterbacks who have to have throw with better anticipation. How many times have we relayed the same story? Every one of us is broadcasters. When the quarterback gets to training camp in the NFL after being in college and doesn't throw the football, and the coach goes, son, why don't you throw the ball? Coach, he wasn't really open. Son, in this league, that is open. You got to find a way to put it in there, right? Because defensive backs are better, quicker, the windows are tighter, et cetera, et cetera. My point is, how many times have you watched a 49ers game and guys are wide open, like clearly, yards, no one around? That scheme is awfully effective. And that's why I think, you know, if you're Kyle Shanahan, you're like, okay, I don't have everybody I want, but I'll find a way to make what I have better. And I always come back to years ago I was working for, I'm not going to say it, Mark, because it'll get you going on. Break your streak. It was a different network, okay? And that's when 49ers weren't very good. But we had ball games where we're watching quarterbacks play, and you know where I'm going with this, right? And all of a sudden, they are viable. Were the 49ers winning games? No. But they were scaring the heck out of people. We had a game in Philadelphia, and who was it? Beathard. C.J. Beathard played. And all of a sudden, they're scaring the heck out of the Eagles. And you're saying, how the heck did they do that? I mean, Nick Mullins looked extremely viable. Are those guys threats to go to the Hall of Fame? No. Are they truly stars in the NFL? No. But in that system, if you do the things that he teaches you and you have the quick twitch and the reaction and all that, you can be viable in that system. He has always been able to do that. I've always been a big admirer of Kyle Shanahan and how he does things.
Charles Davis is with us here on Willard and Dibbs. We are live at Splash at Thrive City on 95.7 The Game. Charles, is the wide receiver market, is it out of whack right now with how much these guys are getting paid?
I don't think so, because this is where we ring the bell. I always come back to the Jerry Glanville, the old man in black, right? Yo, you got to run the football, make sure you set a tone and have some kind of identity. But when it's time to ring that bell, which is one of his favorite expressions, right? When it's time to ring that bell, you got to be able to throw the football. And that's where the game is. When I was younger, since I've already revealed my age, right, and where I am and what TV I was watching, because there are people listening going, Mary Tyler Moore, what the hell are you talking about, right? Look, when I was younger, you ran around, the jersey you wore in your neighborhood had a running back's number on it. Okay? Who was your favorite runner? Because that runner was getting 20, 25 carries a game. He was a lead runner. There was no second runner. Right? That guy was the dude. Kids coming out of Texas ran all wishbone stuff. The only time they caught the ball was when it was in pitched in the air on an option pitch. Now, you go to the state of Texas, what are they giving us? Pitchers and catchers, wide receivers and quarterbacks, runners, yeah. But you guys know where we are with runners. We keep talking about last year was the year of the runner. We brought the runner back into the game. How many of them really cashed in off of that? It's still throwing the football is the way that we get that ball going. It's the way that we create points. It's the way that we do things, how we hunt big plays. 8 times out of 10, 9 times out of 10, impulse is like, we're going to throw it. We're going to throw it. It's just very hard to put a true ground-and-pound offense together with today's rules, CBA, how often you're in pads, all of those things. And I'll say it, if you're an offensive coordinator or a guy who calls plays, you don't get a ton of credit if your team runs people into oblivion. You're not known as a genius unless you're throwing it around.
Doesn't that then make Kyle Shanahan the exception to the rule? Because, as you know, they go 21 personnel, two backs and one tight end more than anyone, and they run it successfully, and now they have Brian Robinson. So is Shanahan zigging while the rest of the league zags?
Always has, though, when you think about it. The first Super Bowl year, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm guessing I'm in the neighborhood. The two playoff games before the Super Bowl, didn't 49ers run it like 8,000 times?
Yeah.
And Jimmy Garoppolo threw it 10 times or less in both games.
He definitely did in the NFC title game against Green Bay. I think he had eight pass attempts. Yeah, I can't remember the week before.
I can't remember what it was before, but it wasn't much. I know Raheem Mostert just kept running into the goalpost. That's all I remember. So he's always been that, right? And remember where he came from on that. He came out of the womb watching dad run the heck out of the football, watching his father create 1,000-yard runners out of guys you've never heard of before or since. Remember that? It seemed like every year they'd have a different guy, and a different guy would run for 1,000 yards because they had such an incredible scheme. They did such a great job with it, and they were willing to stick with it. Kyle has the best mix of it in the NFL in terms of having the patience and the willingness to stay with the run and create that, but not afraid to throw the football when necessary or be able to create the big plays off of the run game and throw it. So he's not zagging at this point. This is what he's always been. When he has great teams, we get to see it much more on display because they play the bigger games. We see them all the time getting to the playoffs, the whole deal. But he's always been like that.
Charles, last year was such a weird year, and everybody has their thoughts and reasons as to why a highly favored Niner team would go 6-11. What do you see this year in terms of a bounce back, in terms of the NFC West? What's your thought?
I just think a healthy Niners team is right back in the mix. It's funny because just a couple years ago, the best division in football was probably NFC West, right? We had three teams go to the playoffs. You know, we thought the Cardinals were on the rise. And as it turned out last year, the Cardinals led the division with, what, 4 or 5 games to go. Couldn't hold the division lead. At the end of it, Los Angeles won it. San Francisco had a ton of injuries, couldn't compete in that part of it. Seattle was right there with an opportunity. In fact, they're the ones who put the hit on Arizona and started them on their slide on out of it. So we were used, you know, we're used to that out in the West, okay? I think the Rams' consistency at different times has probably surprised people, but I give them a ton of credit. Sean McVay, after we got through those couple of years of every year wondering, should I coach, should I not, what should I do, should I do this, should I do that? We haven't heard that in a while, have we? He's back, he's fully in, and boy, they do a nice job. Mike McDonald's team, they battled real hard, have a new quarterback to go. I just think the 49ers, with good health and getting Robert Saleh back as a defensive coordinator, is a big, big deal for this team. I think they're right in this mix. I really do. To me, the interesting team, the most interesting team and one to watch is Arizona. Because they're at this point now with Jonathan Gannon and his crew where people have liked the potential of Arizona. They've liked Jonathan Gannon and what he's done. You know, Drew Petzig on offense as a coordinator, Nick Rawls on defense. I'm on record as being fully in with those guys. I really, really like them. But at the end of the day, it's a true results-based league. They can't just be, hey, they're on the rise, they're making it. It has to come to fruition. And I feel like there's a lot of pressure in their area to be a playoff team. So it's going to be interesting to see how they come out of the gate and play.
Yeah, the West is feeling somewhat wide open. You mentioned Robert Saleh. They only bring back six defensive starters for a team that was 29th in points allowed. How big of an impact can one man, in this case Robert Saleh, make on a very young defense?
I think he can make a huge difference because that's how he worked his way up through the system and became a head coach. You know, developing guys, seeing something in them that other people didn't see, maybe putting them in spots that people didn't anticipate. Fred Warner would be Exhibit A, right? You know, the guy was a nickel safety in college. They turned him into a middle linebacker. He's going to waltz in and wear a gold jacket one day, all right? In New York, he did that. Remember his first, I think one of their early drafts, they drafted like two or three safeties with the idea that two of them at least were going to be moved to linebacker. And it worked out pretty well last year, Jamie and Sherwood, or Jamie, you know, and he ended up playing awfully well for them. I just use that as examples of seeing players, seeing something that maybe other people didn't see, and developing and honing that skill. I just think there's going to be a bunch of guys chomping at the bit to play for him and to play well. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see the 49ers defense play maybe better than what projections are in terms of, you know, who's back, big-time names, things of that nature.
All right, Charles, before you go, I want to ask you, when I say, hey, what'd you think of the news of the day, does your mind go to Shedeur Sanders made the Browns or Travis Kelce's marrying Taylor Swift?
Shedeur Sanders making the Browns, to me, was a fait accompli. I mean, when they kept talking about keeping four quarterbacks, I actually called a friend of mine who's a former GM in the league. I said, you ever keep four quarterbacks? He's like, no. he's like, no. He said, that means there's something in the works somewhere. They're going to move somebody. And we talked our way through it. And I just said, okay, if I say to you, there's no way to get rid of the two rookies because next year they have two first-round picks, right? They've acquired a second first-round pick. It's supposed to be a huge quarterback year coming out of college football. You start with Flacco, but if somehow you're 1-3, I said to me, you got to play the two youngsters and see what you have, don't you? And he agreed with me. He said, to me, that's how I would see it. And I said, Kenny Pickett's odd man out somehow, some way. He gets traded, off he goes. Obviously, the news of the day was the engagement because I was at my favorite sandwich shop and news hit my phone. I kid you not, I'm in a sandwich shop that's not a sports sandwich shop. And you know what happened? The buzz happened. All of a sudden, people were like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. They're engaged. They're engaged. Those two have crossed over from sports and entertainment to simply cultural zeitgeist.
Charles, I shared the story on air earlier today. I did something I shouldn't do because she was in school, but my 16-year-old daughter, I texted her, and all I said was, I assume you heard the news? And she just said, yes. We didn't even need to say what it was.
You didn't say what it was.
She knew exactly what I was talking about right away.
My dad taught for 40-something years. He got out before cell phones became a real thing. I could see him. Right now, he's somewhere in New York State, just like sensing what you just said. Like, yeah, parent texted the kid in the middle of class. That's just great.
About a tight end marrying a pop star.
About a tight end married a superstar.
It's bad parenting. There's no two ways about it. I'm guilty.
Hey, by the way, you're not alone, okay?
Exactly.
If my kids were still in school, I might have driven over there and said, hey, did you guys hear?
Right.
I was about to text my 3-year-old, but I remembered she doesn't have a phone yet, Charles.
She doesn't?
And guess what? You just made the case for her to get one at 3. Like, how do I miss this news, Dad? If I had a phone, I wouldn't have missed it.
That's right, Charles.
Charles, you're the best, man. Thank you so much, as always.
Appreciate you guys very much. You take care of yourselves. Have a great season.
All okay, right. Indeed.
Enjoy watching him on CBS this year.
CBS, that's right. Charles Davis, ladies and gentlemen. We made it. We did it. Charles Davis.
I'm proud of you, bro.
On CBS.
You did the darn thing.
Hey, I work hard, kept my head down,
yeah.
Really focused.
Took one sentence at a time.
Yeah, feels good to execute. It really does.
That's great.
All right, we're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. All right. Been a lot of talk about all the roster stuff. We're live at Splash at Thrive City, the fantasy draft that we kind of helped set up along with Splash at Thrive City last week is apparently, reportedly, going to begin here in 18 minutes. So we'll have that. But also, Forget the roster for a moment. One of the Niner reporters sent out a tweet today that caught my eye, and I went, oh, come on, y'all. We gotta change the way we're thinking about this season. I'll explain. We'll unveil. All of that is coming up next on Willard and Dibs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
Can you sing with that voice?
Literally. I did Daddy Warbucks in middle school, and it was talk singing.
What I'm telling you, Kelly Savalas.
Y-C.
That's singing.
On 95.7 The Game.
All right, there are certain things in our lives.
That's singing.
That we're all fans of.
Yep.
Like, certain things kind of trigger us, positive and negative.
No doubt.
I'll tell you one thing that triggers me in a positive way.
Okay.
And it's when people just go all in with their effort. I like, your results are your results,
yep.
But you know me.
Yep.
Process. So when you go all in with your effort, I am impressed. So I don't even know. Jody, can you hear me? Hey, everybody, make some noise. The whole group, make some noise. Come on, make some noise.
Okay. That's a group.
Dude, it is 4 o'clock on a Tuesday,
yeah.
And y'all live in the South Bay, and we're in Mission Rock, and you're here.
Yep.
So congratulations on your independent wealth, number one. And also, like, wow, look at this group.
They're it's a
like,
great group.
And it's still growing. There's more on the way, apparently.
And it's not even 4, so not only do they make the effort, process versus results, I'm a results guy, and the result is they're here 10 minutes early.
They're early.
In their VIP area, and, you know, you've got a ton of listeners. We got Jerry Rice over there. Happy that Jerry was able to make it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they're about to yak in on their draft.
Dude.
And no better place to do it than live with Willie and Dibby.
Yeah, no doubt. So this is going to be fun. They're starting to get ready. Some more are going to be on their way. I think that they've done a little bob and weave, like Lucas asked him, like, how long has this league been together? And Jody's like, well, we kind of, I think in a way it sounded to me like he was like, we kind of started to build this league.
Right.
Actually, after I won the prize, maybe, you know, you're out, you're in, because you can go, or whatever it may
Perfect.
Be. But
yeah,
so bunch of people here, which we're excited to see. Hell of an effort, and we'll be eating their food shortly. We can't wait.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Save some for us, because we'll be over there during the break, and that's just kind of the way that goes.
Yeah, you see the way my mind works, Tim. It's like, yeah, they're all here, which, like, the first thought is, oh, crap, they might actually eat all of the food. There's a lot of them. But then again, I have a good seat, and I figure they seem nice, and I'm going to help myself here pretty soon. So let's get the party started.
Let's do it. Let's get it started. And, you know, once you get into this point where fantasy drafts are popping off, and I know ours is next week.
Next Wednesday night.
We got the Red and Gold Summit, which is, you know, groundbreaking, and, you know, nice to know that we're the ones who've been doing it for a long time, and we absolutely rock those things. But, you know, you start with every day, you clip closer and closer and closer, and we are now 9 days away from real football.
From an actual game. 9 days from an actual game, 12 days away from a 49er game.
7 hours.
And the roster is ready to go, except for the roster is not fully ready to go. If you're just tuning in, know the Juwan Jennings drama has not been figured out. The Niners kept 5 receivers. Only 2 of them are technically healthy, so more moves are clearly on the way as they continue to try to work through this thing, .. whatever it is. We still don't even really have definition of what's going on, but it's pretty easy to tell that the Niners, A, need to do some things wide receiver-wise, but also, B, I think, in a way, they feel pretty good about what it is they're at least about to do, because, surprisingly, a lot of the, like, in-emergency break glass options they had, they got rid of them. They didn't keep Russell Gage. They didn't keep Robbie Chosen. And so maybe they're going to bring those guys back if they make the practice squad. We'll see how that all works. Maybe the Jennings situation is in better shape than we think it is. That's all still TBD.
Right, and we're not to the point yet where you're desperate to have him come in. You were right to say that, okay, practice tomorrow. The cuts have been made. Now you're the group. And, you know, if this was a high school team, and as a coach, I've gone through cuts where the next day, first day of practice, you get everyone together and you say, all right, this is the group. This is what we're going with. Tough conversations yesterday. Here's our team. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to rock it. We're going to practice here. We're going to practice there. We're going to go out and have a year. And so I don't know if Shanahan will bring all the fellas together in that same fashion, but starting tomorrow, you're the group. And I know with injuries and pup list and suspensions, there's still going to be a bit of a revolving door. But by and large, tomorrow, you're the guys. And we have faith in you. And, you know, if you're, you know, Colby, the seventh round rookie offensive lineman, you made the team,
you made
kid.
It. You made
all right,
it.
Connor Colby.
Yeah.
Come block somebody.
Congrats. Yeah, he's in. So here's what I saw, though, earlier today, and it came from our friend Cam Inman, who covers the 49ers so well. And this is when I want to grab all of this fear, because this is kind of the way we fan. Most fans, especially if it's sports radio, you kind of wake up thinking what's wrong. You know what I mean? You wake up thinking, all right, the wide receiver room, what the hell's going on there? What about the injuries on the offensive line? And are these young defensive linemen going to actually produce? These are my fears. Well, what if we did this from the other side? And I hear a lot of people say, look, it is a transition year. You can't expect too much from the 49ers. You expect some.
Sure.
But you can't go over the top. Like, I'm out on this idea that the Niners are a big favorite this year. And then Cam wrote something that we have talked about a little bit. But to see it in print, it hit me. It straight hit me. I'd like to read to you, because all of the teams on the Niners' schedule have now officially named their starting quarterback.
For week one, yeah.
The last one to do it was the New Orleans Saints, who just announced it earlier today. So, I'm going to read you the list.
Okay.
And you tell me what goes through your mind when I say it. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the list. Sam Darnold, Spencer Rattler, Kyler Murray, Trevor Lawrence, Matthew Stafford, Baker Mayfield, Michael Penix, Russell Wilson, Bryce Young, Joe Flacco, Cam Ward, Daniel Jones, Caleb Williams. As far as week one is concerned, those are the starting quarterbacks for the teams the Niners will play this year. And I would like to flatly ask each and every one of you, especially those of you who have struck some sort of a negative chord with regard to the Niners' chances this year, listen to that list.
Oh, yeah.
And someone explain to me, other than injury to major players, what on earth could your reasoning possibly be for thinking that the 49ers will not be a playoff team this year? I would love to hear someone pitch this to me and explain to me, again, other than major injury, I don't want to hear Brock or Christian might get hurt. Other than that aspect, how on earth can you look at that list and tell me that your expectations are not high for the San Francisco 49ers?
They should be high. Just a couple things. First and foremost, as you're rattling those names off, one thing really struck me. How many of those quarterbacks they're going to face were the number one overall pick in the NFL draft?
Ooh, that's fun. Let's see. One.
Uh-huh.
Two.
Yep.
Three.
Yep.
Four.
You got it.
Four. Five.
Yep, keep going.
Six.
Keep going.
Really?
Seven. Caleb Williams.
No, I got Caleb Williams.
Cam Ward.
Yeah, I got Cam Ward.
Bryce Young.
Bryce Young, that's
Trevor
three.
Lawrence.
Oh, yeah.
Calamari.
Oh, my eyes went over Bryce
Baker
Young.
Baker Mayfield.
Sure.
And then you go all the way back to Matthew Stafford in 09.
By the way, it's half. Half of the quarterbacks.
Correct.
Number one overall
pick. So just
pick.
Hearing that list, I was like, man, that's a lot of not only first-rounders, but number one overall. And the counterpoint to what could possibly go wrong is the defense last year. And I know Saleh is in, and I mentioned this to Charles Davis.
Yep.
29th in points per game allowed. Hideous. They only had two takeaways over the last nine games, which is, you can't survive when you're doing that defensively. And this is the other capper, Mark. Red zone defense last year, 31st out of 32. So if the defense is not a lot better, you can find your way into losing some of these games against teams that you should beat.
Well, of course. I'm not suggesting they're going to go 17-0.
I know.
And some of these quarterbacks that I just mentioned are not bad players. Stafford's a wonderful player.
Yep.
If he's healthy. Baker Mayfield.
Kyler Murray's problematic for you.
He's problematic, right? And yes, Baker Mayfield, this is a good player. Russell Wilson used to be, but he's capable. And we don't know who Cam Ward is going to be. And Caleb Williams has a new coach, and he might be better. And Sam Darnold was dangerous last year. Like, I can do all of that, but like, listen to that list when you say it all at once. And again, notice that the Josh Allens of the world, the Burrows, the Mahomes, the Jalen Hurts, on we could go, even to the Jared Goffs and the Lamar Jacksons and the Justin Herberts, and we can go on and on.
Sure.
None of them are on the 49ers schedule. So
I was looking at the Mike Sando quarterback tiers.
Yep.
They play one game, actually two games against a tier one, Matthew Stafford, if the back holds out. And they play two games against quarterbacks in tier two.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of your games, your other 14, are tier three and below.
Well, and some of these young guys are allowed to be good just because they're not in the tier. Like Cam Ward might be amazing. I don't know.
It could be.
Right?
Caleb Williams should be better.
He should
Everyone's
be better.
Telling us that he'll be better.
Bryce Young was like nice at the end of the year last year. But I think overall you get the idea. So that's truly where my mind's at. And we'd love to take some calls on that right now, just as a test case. 888-957-9570. If you don't think the 49ers are a playoff team this year, give me one reason that's not, well,
injury.
Christian McCaffrey could get hurt. Take that off the board, because that's a big who knows. That's a feather blowing in the wind. But outside of that, when I counter with that list, if you've got any respect for Robert Saleh whatsoever, you think this is a playoff team. I'd love, and I'm going to be open-minded here, but I'd love to hear somebody pitch to us the idea that expectations should be tempered for this team when that's who they're playing. Give me a break.
Right. I mean,
give me a break.
I don't think that it should be tempered, and I've been on record saying I would go over the 10.5. I think there's 11 wins in this schedule, even if you sustain some injuries. And, you know, even if McCaffrey misses a month, you now have Brian Robinson Jr., who is more than competent. He's
totally
a guy who could step in. Basically, he's kind of Jordan Mason. You would expect that sort of productivity if he gets opportunity. The interesting thing to me, Mark, is the timing of the offseason. January, you bring back Robert Saleh, and then in April in the draft, you use your first five picks on defensive players. So if you think that Robert Saleh had a voice in that room, you're absolutely right. So Saleh gets hired, and then you take five defensive players first in your draft.
Yep.
So that tells me Saleh liked certain players, and the team went forward trying to make this defense better. So if you believe in Saleh and their ability to find defensive talent, then absolutely they should be better.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KG, MZ, FM, in HD1, San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station, in the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app. Coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios.